He's giving us a blackboard talk.
Okay. So I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to speak and also for inviting me to Perimeter, my first time here. So I'm going to be talking about this same thing as everybody else, I guess, scalar fields which lead to infinite divergences. So this is going to be the basic Lagrangian. It's just a scalar field with a 5 to the 4th interaction. And I'll be considering when m squared is close to 0. In that case, we have infinite divergences coming from loops of scalar fields. So you go and compute diagrams that look like this, for example. And if m is small, you will find that they are divergent, that this will go as lambda over m squared or something to some power. OK, so we want to deal with this, not least because the inflaton is typically a very light scalar field. OK, so what I want to do to deal with these things is to have a actually compute correlation functions in this theory. And really speaking, I want to do this in De Sitter space. But for various reasons, I'm going to go to the Euclidean continuation. Let me call this thing. Now, on which the Lagrangian looks like this. You know, over the last few days, we've had a lot of discussion on whether these two theories are equivalent. I will comment on that, but for the moment, I think we are all agreed that this is some kind of theory, and certainly I should be able to compute in whatever this theory on the sphere is. So let's just go with that. And we'll get back to the De Sitter case later. OK. So the first thing is that when m squared is small, this theory, even on a sphere, does have infinite divergences. And first I'll show that. Well, before I can cure them, I should at least show you how they arise. OK. So how are we going to compute anything here? Well, the first thing is we want to solve, you know, the mode equations, the equations of motion. So what we do on the sphere is very standard. So we expand in spherical harmonics. So so the spherical harmonics on a higher dimensional sphere, so for example, we might be doing S4. So they are a generalization of the spherical harmonics in a two sphere, but they're qualitatively the same. They're called Y, for example. And instead of having some y elements, there's a y with a bunch of quantum numbers, actually d of them. But fine. It's just qualitatively the same thing. They happen to satisfy plus d. So d is. So they happen to satisfy an equation like this. Which is very useful when we go back to the action. Okay. So what we want to do now is, once you have this expansion, you want to find correlation function, which look like. So this is all just totally standard stuff. What you normally have to do, though, is that this is an interacting theory. It's impossible to solve this exactly. So what we always do is we break the Lagrangian or the action into what we call a leading piece, and then there's perturbations. Okay? And this is a standard thing here. So was that a question? So. And the standard story is, of course, you take the leading term to be okay, and well, there's some integrals of this. So this is the standard thing. We are all familiar with this. This thing now expands out very nicely to look like. And now you say, okay, fine, everything is good, off I'll go. By the way, I've been very cavalier with certain factors. They don't really matter. Sorry? I forgot this. So now you do this, and you say, fine, I can find my leading order propagator. Leading order is just and you can just basically read off the answer. This will look like obvious, basically, to everybody here. Okay. So let's go ahead and do a one-loop computation, which, for example, let's take this diagram. So what is the value of this diagram? Well, we can follow this through just the same way as before. For example, in momentum space, it's just and so this diagram is basically, if I get the factors, let's call this L, L1, L3. Let's do. There's some summation that looks like this, where L1, L2, L3 have to satisfy, you know, they have to roughly sum to L. And each of the propagators looks like this. And immediately you see that if M squared goes to 0, there's some lambda squared up front. There's a lambda squared. If M squared goes to 0, then this expression is divergent. And it's divergent because when you do this sum, you can always have a term where one of the L's is 0, and then that dies. They don't. No, well, I say sum to L, they have to do it. They have to do these Clebsch-Gordan coefficients on this. They don't have to sum at on the. Yeah, OK. Thank you. OK. But the Clebsch-Gordan coefficients always allow L1 to be 0, for example. It still works. So there's a divergence because you have this L equals 0 mode. So that's a problem. This is a standard infrared divergence you would get in Desiter as well. So to fix it, let's just go back to see where this came from. And once you see it, it's pretty obvious why it's there. It's there because in the what we call the tree-level action, if you take m squared equals 0, the phi 0 no longer appears. Okay. So it's a very basic thing. When you do your path integral, normally you say your integral e to the minus s suppresses large fluctuations of your field. But in this limit, the large fluctuations of phi naught are not suppressed. And therefore, when you do that path integral, you just get an infinity. Right? So phi naught, e to the minus s, naught goes to infinity. Right? So how do you fix this? Well, the cure is also, in a sense, obvious. It is true that the quadratic terms don't suppress the fluctuations phi naught, but the interaction terms do. Okay? So the problem was you just used the wrong leading order action. You shouldn't have been just using the quadratic terms in S naught. You need to include some interaction terms. So okay, so, and it's also kind of obvious which interaction terms we want. So S naught started off L plus D. So I'm going to drop my mass term from now on. So now I don't have phi naught anywhere. So what I should do is pull in the phi naught interaction term. I'm just taking the phi naught to the fourth from the interaction piece. So the interaction piece now, well, qualitatively, contains terms like this. So L is means non-zero Ls. Okay, so now I should hope that if I use this tree-level action, everything should be okay. Okay, and we can check that essentially immediately. So you do the same thing as before. So phi x phi y to leading order is now that same integral. So and the nice thing is, even though this is an interaction term, this whole integral still splits up. There's the integral over the non-zero modes coming from here and the zero mode coming from here, but your path integral is still a sum of two things. So this is right, and this is just as before. So this is basically the main thing. You now have this new thing, which you can check with not much effort that it goes as 1 over square root lambda Okay, so this has been a bunch of technical manipulations, but are there any questions? No. So what has happened? If you go back and compare it to the case where there was a mass, this thing would have been 1 over the mass squared. So what has happened is that so what we have done here, I'm going to lose that. So what we have done here is actually we have resummed a whole bunch of diagrams. So there are, in the theory, the original theory, there were an infinite set of diagrams that looked like this, plus. I could have, in the original theory, where I had infinite divergences, I could have attempted to write down all these diagrams and resum them. Each of them would have been infinite divergent, but the summation, I could have tried to make it work. And what I've done it directly without doing any diagrammatics, but it's this resummation. So this set of diagrams resums okay. And this is basically exact.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm asking.
But at one loop, it gets a mass from that interaction. So can't I think of it as that?
From this interaction?
Just the usual one loop, the tadpole. Yeah,
sure, sure.
There is no quadratic, there is no Gaussian term, which gives you propagators. You have just lambda phi to the fourth.
However, you could think of that as a limiting case where you take the mass to zero. Right? And then you resum it and then take the mass to zero. And then there's still a two-point function. And yes, there is, diagram by diagram, there is a contribution to the mass. Each of those is infinite divergent. You can't really do anything with them. But the point is that it has a finite, the resummation has a finite limit.
Well, I'm making a simpler point. I would say that the field theory that's going on there just really isn't interpretable in terms of the mass. It's that...
Okay, fine. I would maybe
you're treating the zero mode different, and the zero mode never is Gaussian.
Okay, so let me call it the mass gap. Would you be happier with that? There is no.
I like it the way you said it. It just the top line just doesn't correspond to the words there.
Well, if you don't want to think of it as a mass, that's fine. This is the propagator at the end of the thing. Okay, I just want to say that this will not have an infinite divergence. And the cut, and similar to adding a mass.
But I mean, if you look at Coleman Lineberg, they also worked at the zero mass.
Yes, that's correct.
And they also resum certain class of diagrams to get an effective theory for the zero mode.
That's correct.
So, in some sense, I mean, this is just.
I'm not saying this is anything super exotic. There are many theories where masses are generated by dynamics, not least in condensed matter, is full of such things.
Yeah.
And this is one case where such a mass develops. The only special thing here is that you can compute it exactly. This number is something, it's just an integral. So you know the mass gap. One interesting thing is that it's not analytic in lambda, it goes to the square root of lambda, and it's exact.
Do you really need this interpretation in terms of the generation of mass gap? Or
no, I don't need it.
I mean,
if you don't like it, you can just think of this as the final problem, two-point function.
It's a little funny. The zero mode needs to be treated with the phi to the four term in what you call the free theory.
Yeah.
Couldn't it be that, so I know that your logic, that you are treating those terms perturbatively, but couldn't it be that that term lambda phi zero squared times pi L squared,
yes.
When you resum,
yes.
Will give you contributions would be comparable to what you have.
Yes, so I could prove that it doesn't happen and I will do that. Uh-huh. Yep. So the other thing you could have asked is, well, does this really cure my infrared divergences? Or have I just done something funny where, you know, I introduced a mass into my Lagrangian and I just didn't treat it right, so to speak? So to answer that, basically, so I could phrase it another way. Suppose I had started from a theory with a negative tree-level m squared. Could I then have canceled off this mass gap? Then I'd have no mass gap, and I'd be back to infrared divergent theory. By the way, I haven't really proven it yet, but it should be hopefully intuitive that this modified propagator will not have the divergence that this one had. There are an infinite, set, obviously. Yes, yes. So I will come to that later. I will talk about that. Okay, very good. So let me just also do this with a finite mass. And the answer doesn't change very much. Basically, you will still have a zero-mode propagator that gets modified. So phi naught will now be. Over the usual. And you can check. And yes. I'm sorry, both of them are minus. Both of them, yes.
But from your expression there, how did you extract the mass squared being one being root lambda as opposed to one over root? Wouldn't it just be the coefficient of the quadratic term?
So my analogy was, if I had a mass.
I see. Okay. So the other thing is, and I should have probably asked this at the beginning. Why aren't you worrying about just the tadpole graph? You know, 5/4 with just a line and a bubble, not the setting sun.
Because
you get
there's no tadpole
5/4,
like a one-way function.
Sure.
No, but coming from that term that I was mentioning before, right?
Right. I mean, you just have.
Not that one.
Straight line.
Not bubble attached to it.
You want to suspect in here? That's not a problem. You want me to draw that as well? That's fine.
Well, yeah. I guess, are you resumming those?
It doesn't contribute because you can renormalize it away, but if you want to put it there.
Is there an infrared problem?
Yeah, is there an infrared?
But that's what you did.
Of course,
just included that time.
Of course it is.
I mean, he doesn't really resum anything. Forget about that part. Just
everything
is finite after he did
it. Right.
It's just an attempt at an interpretation.
Thank you.
But that's the one which would represent the possible contribution from the term that I was asking. And somehow I guess that we are asking because usually in the Hartree-Fock approximation, that one is the relevant one.
Right.
So that's
right,
why
exactly.
One was wondering whether they would give some contribution.
The powers of lambda would be.
Right.
There are two contributions here. Sure.
Maybe he said he's going to prove that.
This one is finite, of course. It doesn't have any infinite dimension.
Yes. Albert, this is just exactly what we were talking about.
Yeah, I know.
You agree with this.
Yeah.
So,
we both agree with
I think everybody agrees with this. I'm not sure what the question is, frankly.
As long as you discuss afterward, you said that you would prove that the contribution from this term is not.
Well, maybe, I'm not sure, maybe it's a different question, but this contribution is just a finite contribution,
yes.
And it's of order lambda.
Yes.
And the fine thing I found is of order square root of lambda, therefore it's much larger.
Okay.
And that was the question, this is why it's small.
No, what he is asking, in the effective action, you have lambda phi 0 to the fourth and plus lambda phi 0 to the square.
plus lambda phi 0 squared.
This is a contribution to effective action after integration over the phi l's. You will get phi 0 squared with lambda, with the coefficient proportional to the lambda, which is of the same order as that one, lambda phi to the fourth.
Well, of course, but you shouldn't. What all I'm saying is that I found the two-point function. This two-point function you can reinterpret as some term Lagrangian, but of course you never do that. You know, I'm just doing, Anyway, so back to this. So I added a finite mass to start with. And you can, it's maybe obvious, I won't spend too much time on this, that this never diverges. Therefore, the zero mode always has, so to speak, a mass. If you don't like the word mass, you just want, I want to say that. Okay. Some other people should not.
No, but I mean, you have exactly the same thing in thermal field theory.
Yes.
When you go to Matsubara, lambda phi to the 4, you take the specially.
No, you don't. You have a term proportional to lambda there.
No, it's squared to lambda, sorry.
N squared is proportional to lambda.
Yeah, the calculus is different, but it's qualitative.
That makes a big difference.
Yeah.
It's not a perturbative contribution in that sense.
Oh, no, but the other one is also
non-perturbative.
Yes, but it's.
Are you going to say something about negative m squared?
Yes, so the point about negative m squared was you could try and make this negative by making this positive, but the integral is still finite. And the reason is that at large enough phi, it will still be cut off. So the basic point is you can't get rid of this mass gap by starting with a negative mass. It just always works. So the theory is always infinite finite. Okay? So if you actually look at the mass gap as a function of the bare mass in the Lagrangian, it has a fair, a curious behavior that it starts off, the mass, if the mass is large, the gap is the mass, and then it, but when the mass goes to zero, the gap stays non-zero, it goes a little bit below, and then it comes back up. Okay, so the mass gap is always positive, and this gap, the minimum gap, is of order lambda to the 1/4. I should say that similar results have been obtained by qualitative arguments by many people. There's a paper by Ryoto and Slot that does attempts to solve the gap equation and in some approximation. They find something similar. There's a paper by people here, Burgess. I forget, four people.
We're here.
Just here. You know who you are.
I really know who you are.
Everybody here wrote that paper. They even have a graph similar to this, except not quite. But, the qualitative features were there. So, in a sense, this is a rigorous calculation of things that people kind of knew was supposed to happen.
I think the authors of that paper should speak up, because their calculation was the tadpole calculation.
Right. We resummed tadpoles.
Right, but that's of course not enough. I mean, this is just.
Well, there's no way
this is smaller than that.
What you've done is that's right, because that approximation is essentially a Gaussian approximation, and for when you have only one field, as in this case, then if you have many, if you have a large N situation, that would be a good approximation. But when you have only one field, you actually have a highly non-Gaussian situation, is that lambda phi 4. So I think that what you're doing is qualitatively different, and it's capturing actually the right thing, which is this non-Gaussianity.
That's right. That's why it's bad to say that.
Clearly some people don't like the word, that's fine. So let me just go on to higher order. I just want to show that it's infinite finite, but more than that, it's calculable, right? It's not just it's a finite number, we don't have any idea what to do with.
Sorry, could you explain, I cannot wait until the end asking this question. Could you explain what does it have to do with the sitter?
Okay, you want me to change my order? Good.
Huh?
Okay, fine. That's fine. I'll do that. And I'll come, but I will try to come back to this if I have time. Okay.
Because of the analytical generation of this to the sitter, you won't get in.
Okay, let me tell you what you get. But your question, I'll try to come back later. What does this tell us about Lorentzian scaling? Now, to say, explain that, let me first do a couple of computations which you have seen before. And that might tell you what it's supposed to be. So, given this finite propagator, you can now compute the variance of this theory. The variance is defined, and I'll define it. You take phi x, y, y in the sitter, minus the same thing in flat, as a u to cut off the uv divergences, and you take x minus y to 0, and what you will get is basically this. You find a variance that for the Maskus field that doesn't grow, but instead grows as 1 over square root of lambda. So where have you seen this before? Well, Starobinsky found exactly this thing when he resummed his late time, when he did the entire summation of the late time series, he found this thing. So then you can ask yourself, does this actually work? And now I'm going to tell you what this is supposed to tell you. So now I'm going to tell you what this is supposed to mean for the difficulty. So the general picture I have is this. You're doing your Inin formalism, so you're calculating from in whatever the Inin case. And as we've been arguing about all this time, you can do what all these computations, but the problem is this in vacuum is not truly the sitter invariant, right? The reason is not here.
This is the free vacuum.
This is the zero particle vacuum, not the sitter invariant. And presumably, the de Sitter dynamics will make it evolve. And it will evolve, hopefully, so it evolves to a de Sitter invariant vacuum and suppose it does that, suppose there is actually a de Sitter invariant vacuum to which it evolves, then it's clear what that must be. It must be the vacuum you get from the sphere.
Usually suppositions, I don't know, are based on some intuition.
Sure.
Any example in nature where that happens? I don't know.
But what happens?
Have you ever encountered a situation in physics where something similar to this happened?
So inflation is that specific picture. You start with some initial state, which has whatever fluctuation you want. Let it evolve, and what do you get at the end of inflation? You get a de Sitter invariant state.
But there are many de Sitter invariant states. Alpha vacuum.
Well, okay, there's an alpha vacuum.
De Sitter invariant doesn't say much.
No, it says a lot. It certainly tells you that that there's no particle production in that.
I'm sorry, where does this statement comes from that any perturbation in inflation leads to the
sitter invariant. So that is the basic law of inflation, right? It gets, things get smoothed out, you get to a very smooth space.
You mean any classical excitation over the sitter dies out? That's what you're saying.
That's right. And this is an excitation.
But you are talking about quantum mechanical, quantum physics. He's talking about quantum evolution of the de Sitter non-invariant state to de Sitter invariant state, which is quite much different from the fact that it's like, exponentially growing.
No,
classical.
It starts with any state in quantum mechanics. It evolves to its ground state. This is the variational principle, right? I mean,
but in de Sitter, this is not the situation. This is exactly the point of argument of this conference.
That's not, no. The point of argument, at least of yesterday, was a different one. As far as I understand Marolf, Morrison, and Higuchi, this is not what they're claiming. What I'm claiming is, it's only true in the late time limit that you go to a de Sitter invariant vacuum.
It's at most. It's assumed that the sitter stays forever.
Okay. Let's let the speaker finish. Okay. He's running out of time. He's got 10 minutes left.
10 minutes? Okay. So, if this is true...
Richard, you're the chairman.
So, this implies, if you believe all this, and I'm just giving you support for this, that the summation of this logging, the late time divergences, should match up with the sitter. I mean, with the sphere. So not only should the two-point function agree with like this, the endpoint function, as calculated on the sphere, should be this resummed thing, which fortunately we have, because Starobinsky did that calculation. And let me just tell you that you can do it, and you get basically the same answer. So if I compute on the sphere, I get 9 over 5 squared lambda to the n. And this was actually, you know, Richard Woodard presented the same formula as resummed by Starobinsky. And everything agrees except that you had a 1/2, I think, instead of 1/4. So either I have a mistake or there was a typo, I'm hoping, in which case this would agree. So this would be evidence that, in fact, the late time resummation matches up with the sphere. And the only way I can see that should happen is if some picture like what I just said is true. That you start with the in, you do your computations, but you go to late times, and you get this field.
So, trivial question. If n is equal to 1, you have a 1 over lambda. Here it's 1 over square root of lambda. There's a square root of this.
Yes, I think we're number 2. I should check. When I checked it in my office, I agreed. Good. Any questions? Any more? Okay. So this disagrees a little bit with what I think Morov and Higuchi and Morrison are saying, because this would say that you won't really get the same answer if you do in and the sphere, but there'd be some late time matchup.
I think that perhaps there's a subtlety here with the massless case, but if you were doing this for a massive case, the point is that I think what they were saying is that if you consider the in vacuum, let's say using spatially flat sections, and you integrate really from minus infinity, that then you should get the same result as for the sphere. Except for the moment for a sufficiently massive field, and then we can get into the subtleties of the light or massless fields.
But I don't see why it shouldn't work for light or massless to start with. But let me skip that question.
I'm not sure what I understood. So are you saying that this agreement is a matter of this particular case, the matter case, or?
No, it's an agreement. I think I'm fine. No, it'll agree in general.
It's because you're putting the in vacuum of the free theory. But
that's what Starobinsky did this computation in.
Yes.
So I'm saying the reason the Starobinsky and this agree that the in vacuum evolves to this.
Right, but I don't think that there's a disagreement with what
maybe not.
Was mentioning yesterday. Maybe
not. Okay, I mean, not sure. But let me answer your other question, which about higher loops. So the basic thing you need to prove is that higher loop things have a finite expansion. So for example, you can ask, is the connection to this propagator finite? And there are diagrams that look like this, where you have zero modes running around. And I just wanted to say the counting goes as this. There are two vertices, and there are two propagators, each of which has a 1 over square root of lambda. So this diagram is of order lambda. So the connection to the mass of this is small. This collection is of order lambda, and so good. So now you can do this, all these perturbative computations, which answers a question that Steve asked Richard Woodard. So at the end of his talk, Steve asked, is there a theory that doesn't just do the leading logs, but also does all the subleading cases? Here it is. The theory of the sphere doesn't just do the leading log, but all the subleading cases to whichever order in lambda you choose to perform.
Does it get any logs at all?
It reforms the logs. They are gone, of course.
But you don't have any logs to
begin with, so
there aren't any logs.
The resummation of your logs, that's just in this phi squared, I didn't have any logs to start with. But the resummation you get from Sadovinsky agrees with this. It just gives you the resummation for free without doing the logs.
I don't want to abuse my role as chairman, but I think that's disingenuous. The formula you quoted is the result of Starobinsky, so there's no corrections from the subleading logarithms, whereas I think there really are probably corrections.
No, it's a physical question you can ask. How does the variance grow when you take time to infinity? And there's all these lambda log A's and subleading terms and so on. Those will resum an infinite time limit to something independent of time.
You don't have logs. I mean, you just have a result.
How can you have logs? How can you have time dependence if you're doing everything in the Euclidean formulation?
I don't know.
It's presenting the late time limit.
It's a late time limit.
There's a statement without any basis, I would say.
But I just told you.
There's no late time. It's Euclidean.
And it's self-evidently false.
But however, I don't understand what you mean. The only summation that has been done, I agree. You resum your variance, the log A thing. When you resum, obviously the log A will go away, right?
But I think even Starobinsky would agree that there are some corrections, some non-leading logarithm corrections, and you're getting zero.
No, but he has said.
No, but let me ask, can you explain again why you think that you... do you think that Starobinsky's approach resums beyond the leading logs? Or?
No.
Okay, and but this approach does.
Yes.
And can you explain to me why again?
So we should go to the question period now.
I think we are in the question period. But I'm actually done with the talk, so that's fine.
Speaker.
We will recognize people for questions, so let's have 5 minutes of questions.
Okay, so maybe Steve.
So I think you're saying that if you can do the non-perturbative functional integral, then that in this context, then you are accomplishing at least some part of what I was asking.
Well, no, I would just say accomplishing all of what you're asking, but other than that...
There's the question of other things like gravity.
Oh, yeah, gravity. Another question. fine. If you're asking that, then I completely agree with you.
Just a comment. On the blackboard, these are the corrections to Starobinsky's result, right?
Yeah.
So that's exactly what
show me what you get for feet at the end. Show me feet at the two end.
That is
Starobinsky's result, up to maybe whether the argument in the gamma function and some
H. Yes, but I didn't just copy out the Starobinsky's paper. That's what you mean. I can draw a diagram that looks like this.
However, you got it. You're getting zero corrections to the leading logarithm result. That cannot be right.
No, I'm not. I'm getting corrections. I can draw a diagram that looks like this. For example, I mean...
But that is the leading logarithm result. That's it.
The leading logarithm result was 1 over square root of lambda?
If you take your result divided by Starobinsky's result, the ratio is 1.
The result at that level is the same. I am saying that in addition to that, you can do loop corrections to this endpoint function. That thing is what you get at the leading order for the three-point...
Could you explain where you got that formula?
Sure, this formula.
Just the integral which you have taken.
So there's an exact formula for this thing, which looks like, obviously, you know, phi. I should write n of these things and write e to the I f over this thing, where this is the thing on the sphere. To leading order.
This is not what you calculated. Please write what you calculated.
Okay, yes, I'm getting to that. To leading order. If I want the leading lambda behavior, I can do that by noting that it's going to be coming from this lambda phi to the fourth. And then the only place I'm going to get it is phi naught to the n.
Are you saying that you know the answer for this integral?
Yeah.
Like
yes,
that?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, it's just a single
concept.
No, but I never knew the explicit formula for the integral in terms of for this integral.
No, you do it.
Minus lambda x to the fourth ordinary integral by.
It's a gamma function.
I know it's a definitely, but what is the answer?
It's a gamma function. It looks like this actually, and it's very simple. You just do the variable change phi naught to the fourth to t. It just becomes a gamma function integral one line. It's not a typical integral. However, the point is, there are corrections. The corrections look like phi naught squared, phi squared, which I dropped in this leading order calculation, but which I can calculate in a perturbation series. I mean, that's all. I'll just get a correction.
So, can I understand your result as because you are doing a Euclidean calculation which corresponds to infinite pi? So, this is actually a leading log, I mean, because other logs.
I can't tell.
I think your question was how can I tell it's a subleading log? And that I can tell you how I can tell.
No, but how can you tell it's late time, early time, or anything? Because it's Euclidean time.
Okay, that's a physical argument. That was his argument that people may not have really bought. But see, I'm getting this agreement of this phi squared only at late times. And the physical reasoning for that is the theory in De Sitter at late times will flow to a De Sitter invariant vacuum, which is the vacuum coming from a sphere. In that case, every correlation function at late times will go to a correlation function of the sphere.
So let me make sure. That's an assumption.
This is an assumption. I'm assuming this.
And within that assumption, you get this matchup.
Yes, exactly.
By the fact that the correlators drop off.
Yeah, that's not a crazy assumption.
But given that the issue is all about the massless case.
I agree. But I'm saying it's an incremental assumption.
Right. But of course, my evidence for that is that there is a matchup at leading log. I can see the subcorrection. Yes, please.
No, I just want to make something clear. I think, you see, from the form of your integral, that you've actually done, what I think you have really done, is you've resummed the cut points. That's the correct statement.
Of course not. That's resummed everything.
Not just cut points. They're all the zero mode.
Because I can write e to the minus e lambda phi to the fourth as expansion in cut points.
These are really interesting questions, and I've abused my prerogative as speaker, so I should stop. Dan, you're going to give a blackboard talk.
Okay.
Okay, so let's thank the speaker one more time.